This is Al Jazeera. I'm Darien Abogado. We're bringing you continuous coverage of the UK's Prime Minister's Boris Johnson's resignation. After 2 days of political high drama, Johnson has announced his resignation. So the Prime Minister made a statement outside his official residence in Downing Street just about half an hour ago, and he said he was sad to be leaving the best job in the world. Boris Johnson had been resisting the calls for him to step down. Here's what he had to say.
It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new Prime Minister. And I've agreed with Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of our backbench MPs, that the process of choosing that new leader should begin now. And the timetable will be announced next week. And I've today appointed a cabinet to serve, as I will, until a new leader is in place. So I want to say to the millions of people who voted for us in 2019, many of them voting Conservative for the first time, thank you for that incredible mandate, the biggest Conservative majority since 1987, the biggest share of the vote since 1979. And the reason I have fought so hard in the last few days to continue to deliver that mandate in person was not just because I wanted to do so, but because I felt it was my job, my duty, my obligation to you to continue to do what we promised in 2019. And of course, I'm immensely proud of the achievements of this government, from getting Brexit done to settling our relations with the continent for over half a century, reclaiming the power for this country to make its own laws in Parliament, getting us all through the pandemic, delivering the fastest vaccine rollout in Europe, the fastest exit from lockdown, and in the last few months, leading the West in standing up to Putin's aggression in Ukraine. And let me say now to the people of Ukraine that I know that we in the UK will continue to back your fight for freedom for as long as it takes. And at the same time, in this country, we've been pushing forward a vast programme of investment in infrastructure and skills and technology, the biggest in a century, because if I have one insight into human beings, it is that genius and talent and enthusiasm and imagination are evenly distributed throughout the population, but opportunity is not. And that's why we must keep levelling up, keep unleashing the potential of every part of the United Kingdom. And if we can do that in this country, we will be the most prosperous in Europe. And in the last few days, I've tried to persuade my colleagues that it would be eccentric to change governments when we're delivering so much and when we have such a vast mandate and when we're actually only a handful of points behind in the polls, even in mid-term after quite a few months of pretty relentless sledging and when the economic scene is so difficult domestically and internationally. And I regret not to have been successful in those arguments. And of course, it's painful not to be able to see through so many ideas and projects myself. But as we've seen at Westminster, the herd instinct is powerful. And when the herd moves, it moves. And my friends, in politics, no one is remotely indispensable. And our brilliant and Darwinian system will produce another leader equally committed to taking this country forward through tough times, not just helping families to get through it, but changing and improving the way we do things, cutting burdens on businesses and families, and yes, cutting taxes, because that is the way to generate the growth and the income we need to pay for great public services. And to that new leader, I say, whoever he or she may be, I say, I will give you as much support as I can. And to you, the British public, I know that there will be many people who are relieved and perhaps quite a few who will also be disappointed. And I want you to know how sad I am to be giving up the best job in the world. But them's the breaks. I want to thank Carrie and our children, and all the members of my family who have had to put up with so much for so long. I want to thank the peerless British Civil Service for all the help and support that you have given our police, our emergency services, and of course, our fantastic NHS who at critical moment helped to extend my own period in office, as well as our armed services and our agencies that are so admired around the world, and our indefatigable Conservative Party members and supporters whose selfless campaigning makes our democracy possible. I want to thank the wonderful staff here at Chequers, here at Number 10, and of course at Chequers, and our fantastic prop force detectives, the one group, by the way, who never leak. Above all, I want to thank you, the British public, for the immense privilege that you have given me. And I want you to know that from now on until the new Prime Minister is in place, your interests will be served and the government of the country will be carried on. Being Prime Minister is an education in itself. I've travelled to every part of the United Kingdom, and in addition to the beauty of our natural world, I found so many people possessed of such boundless British originality and so willing to tackle old problems in new ways that I know that even if things can sometimes seem dark now, our future together is golden.
So that was a statement Johnson made just a short time ago. Let's cross over to Westminster and bring in Rory Challis. He's joining us from there. So how is this going down at Westminster, Rory? Because he's resigned, but he's staying on for a little bit. And presumably Conservative MPs will have a reaction, and so will the opposition.
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to. There are certainly MPs in Westminster who would like to see the back of Boris Johnson as soon as possible. And there are others who would like the process to work itself through and to maybe take a little bit more time over it. Now, Boris Johnson, in his resignation address there, said them's the breaks, that it was the kind of the brilliant and Darwinian system, as he put it, I think really that he feels did him in. Now, I can speak to Stuart Andrew, who until yesterday was housing minister. You know Boris Johnson. Was it the system that did him in, or was it Boris Johnson himself?
Well, I think probably a combination of the two, really. But, you know, I'm not going to knock the man when he's down. I had to make a difficult decision, but I recognise he's done an enormous amount of work as Prime Minister, not least the Brexit situation we found ourselves in, responding quickly to the pandemic, and, of course, the issues that we're seeing in Ukraine. But ultimately, you know, people were raising with me about trust and integrity, and so I had to make that decision to go yesterday.
And you said the country deserves better. Why did you say that?
Well, because I think actually, you know, politicians get a bad name anyway. We don't want to confirm that. And I think it's important that we have people in place that people can trust, and that's what I want to see restored. But now is a time for this transition to happen, let the leadership election happen, and we can carefully consider who the next leader of the party should be.
So you don't agree then with Andrew Bridgen? I was speaking to him earlier, and he was saying that Boris Johnson needs to go right now, that there are perhaps more damaging allegations to come out about him, and that he is fatally compromised. He needs to go right now.
Well, it's the normal run of things when a Prime Minister stands down, that they do continue until the new leader has been elected. That happened with David Cameron, it happened with Theresa May. And, you know, we need to get the functioning of government up and running again quickly, because there are some serious issues that need addressing. Let that process happen so that we can get on with running the country.
Well, we spoke about an hour ago and you were running off to go and do something in Parliament. Tell us what you were running off to do and why.
So, as the Housing Minister, I was with my colleague Neil O'Brien taking through the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill, which is in committee at the moment. Of course, we both stood down yesterday, and so there isn't a minister at the moment to see that bill go through. So, as a consequence, we had to meet this morning just to adjourn the committee until next week, when probably somebody will be in post.
Because that's a big problem, isn't it? There is, at the moment, barely a functioning government.
So, I mean, the thing is, we mustn't forget that there are thousands of civil servants in the the system that do an incredible job, and so they will be making sure that that process is still happen. But you're right, in terms of, you know, the process of delivering the legislation in here, that is slightly in flux at the moment, but I'm pretty confident that that will be restored, pretty quickly, and certainly by next week.
Who do you want to see as the next leader?
So I haven't made my decision yet. I'm keen to hear what the candidates have got to offer, because there are some really big challenges facing the country, not least cost of living and people concerned about that, and seeing, you know, the prices rising, inflation is a concern to people, and also how we continue to respond in the situation in Ukraine. So I want to listen carefully to what the candidates have to say and see what their vision is for the country, but also how they want to lead us into the next election so that we can hopefully win that again.
There are big problems facing the Conservative Party, aren't there? The recent by-election defeats point to a fracturing of the Conservative Party's electoral coalition, that you're perhaps losing the red wall that you gained most recently in the north and perhaps losing a blue wall in the south as well. So how does the next leader of the party rally that disintegration and try and prevent a defeat at the next election?
So, you know, I've been in this game long enough now to know that actually by-elections midterm for any government, whatever colour, are incredibly difficult. And I don't think it's insurmountable to get ourselves back and ready with a serious chance of winning at the next election. But I would certainly hope that the new leader will certainly focus on those issues that people do care about. And I think to do that, you know, levelling up is something that I think is resonating in communities that have been left behind for so many decades. So I think that will help us in the red wall areas, but equally making sure that the cost of living crisis is being addressed for people all over the country, and recognising the conservative values that people do support, you know, cutting taxes and being sensible running the economy. So those are the sorts of things we need to focus on from now on in.
Because the latest polls aren't particularly good for the Tories, are they? It suggests that the general population is moving against the party.
So the thing with the polls is that they do keep changing a lot. Now, I have to say, you know, I remember when Margaret Thatcher was in government and she would often be 20 points behind, and she often would argue that if she wasn't midterm, she was doing something wrong. So, you know, and she went on to win elections. And I think that has happened, in other scenarios since. So I think we can get this back. We've just got to focus. We've got to unite now behind whoever is the new leader. And we have to speak directly to the people of this country that we are serious about addressing their concerns.
So what about the timetable then for replacing Boris Johnson? How quickly should this move?
Well, that'll be for the 1922 executive to set the timetable. I suspect, although I could be wrong, that we will probably have quite an accelerated process within the weeks before recess, so that hopefully then we can have the two candidates who will go before the party membership, and they have the summer recess to sort of go around the country to speak to members of the party, you know, who ultimately will make that decision.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Stuart Andrew.
Thank you.
Stuart Andrew, who formerly was Housing Minister. Back to you.
Thank you so much. Rory Chalmers reporting from Westminster. So with Boris Johnson's exit, who are the frontrunners to take over the top job? Well, there's a former Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, had a high profile in the pandemic. He gained popularity as the public face of the government's economic recovery plans, but concerns over his wife's tax status were costly. There's the Foreign Secretary, Liz Truss, who is one of the most popular senior members of the party. Her previous post of International Trade Secretary saw her secure post-Brexit trade deals. Also in the running, former Foreign and Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt, who was Boris Johnson's main rival in the last leadership contest. Sajid Javid has now resigned twice from Boris Johnson cabinet, first as Chancellor, then on Tuesday he quit as Health Secretary. Javid was the first person of colour to hold one of the great offices of state when he was appointed Home Secretary in 2018. Nadeem Zawahi was immediately named as Sunak's replacement as Chancellor. He previously served as Education Secretary. Let's cross over to Paul Brennan, who's joining us more from London, to talk about the potential candidates going forward, Paul, and actually what happens next.
Well, that's a big question, because the timetable has not exactly been specified. We heard from Boris Johnson in his speech at the lectern over my shoulder, less than an hour ago now, just to say that a timetable will be established next week in order to finalize exactly how the transition of power will be organized. But there are many people who do not want Boris Johnson to remain in charge, even as a caretaker prime minister, while the process continues. Many former ministers, many people who resigned from the government because precisely of Boris Johnson, think it would be an absolute mistake to have him in charge. He's the reason why they went, and they don't think he should stay. Some of the quotes were really quite brutal. I mean, Dominic Cummings, the former special advisor to Boris Johnson here at Downing Street, who became Johnson's nemesis after Cummings left Downing Street, said leaving Johnson in charge would risk carnage. Another former minister, unnamed, said the behaviour of Boris Johnson over the previous 48 hours was reckless and erratic, and he can't be trusted through to the autumn. God knows what he will do. And another one was that George Freeman, a minister who resigned this morning before Boris Johnson finally capitulated and said that he was going to step aside, said that Johnson needs to hand in the seals of office to the Queen and advise her to call for a caretaker prime minister to take over from today. So there's a lot of pressure for Boris Johnson not to be allowed to remain in Downing Street for a period of perhaps as long as 3 months, holding court over this kind of caretaker administration through to the autumn when a new leader would... Well, the intention is to have a new leader elected for the Conservative Party in time for the autumn conference. Many people deeply unhappy about that, and it's still very uncertain as to what the timetable will actually be.
Paul, let me ask you something about the opposition. Keir Starmer, leader of the main opposition party, said this, that he would call for a parliamentary confidence vote in the government if the Conservatives did not remove Johnson at once. How likely is that still to happen?
There's a lot of questions about what the Labour Party's strategy is going to be. I don't want to turn off our international viewers by getting into the sort of inside baseball of British domestic politics. But, I mean, there's a lot of questions being asked about Labour as to why they weren't pushing for a confidence vote in Parliament. You know, selecting a Prime Minister is essentially a Conservative Party, almost internal, process. It's not the wider country that selects the Prime Minister. It's the Conservative Party in Parliament. Their MPs get together, they decide which of them is good enough for the top job, which of them has the support to take the top job. It's not for the wider parliamentary, contingent. That said, when Boris Johnson was digging his heels in and refusing to go, and the prospect was that the internal processes of the Conservative Party would not be quick enough in order to remove him, and might be next week, a lot of pressure was on the Labour Party to say, well, you, Labour Party, you call a vote in Parliament because there's probably a lot of Conservative MPs who will side with you and get rid of Boris Johnson. A lot of questions as to why that wasn't. And I think one reason why was because the Labour Party were concerned that if they were the ones who were seen to wield the knife against the Prime Minister, it might actually coalesce support around him. You know, as Boris Johnson said in his departure speech here, the herd instinct is strong, and an attack on a Prime Minister, even as flawed as Boris Johnson, might just bring support back into his camp. So I think that's why Labour's strategy has been, on the one hand, perhaps quite subtle, perhaps quite clever, but on the other hand, still open to question.
All right. And just one more with you, Paul. I mean, what does this all mean for the governance and the running of the country? Liz Truss has come out with a statement calling for calmness and unity. But in terms of the governance and the issues that people are really dealing with, the high cost of living, inflation, what impact is this going to have?
Well, it is going to have an impact. I mean, there is some mirth in Westminster circles about Liz Truss's predicament. She is the Foreign Secretary. She is in Bali in Indonesia at the G20 summit. And yet her ambitions for the Conservative Party leadership and the ambitions of her to be Prime Minister are well known. So it is a stroke of unique bad luck for her to be essentially on the other side of the world when all this is going on. So she is understood to be racing back to Britain as quickly as she possibly can to put herself into the mix of all of this. As far as the processes of government go, well, Boris Johnson this morning started reappointing ministers to the offices of state in order to try to maintain some kind of functioning process, some kind of functioning government for the weeks ahead. We've got about 2 weeks left before Parliament is due to rise for the summer holiday. So there's not long, actually, for government to continue, but there are always decisions that are necessary, even in the holiday periods. So even though Parliament is rising on the 21st of July, the actual departments, Treasury, Defence, they still need to operate. And without ministers to sign off on decisions, to actually make decisions, it's very difficult. So he has been making appointments this morning. The dilemma is, who's going to take those appointments and how can they operate? I mean, many of these people actually quit because of Johnson. And if he's staying in number 10, it is a really difficult conundrum for people to square, a circle for them to square, if they're going back into a government which still has him, even nominally, at the head of it.
OK, thank you so much. Paul Brennan reporting from London. Let's bring in our political commentator, Jonathan Liss. He's joining us by Skype from London as well. Welcome to Al Jazeera. So Paul Brennan was just saying that even though Boris Johnson has obviously resigned, he's staying on for a little while longer. He's still making some appointments, some cabinet appointments. What is the strategy behind that?
The strategy is to inflate his ego as much as it could possibly go. He's determined to cling on to office, cling on to his title, as long as his party allows him. And now that makes no sense to the country, which is facing, you know, incredible challenges from the cost of living crisis, also, of course, from the Ukraine war. And it doesn't make any sense for the party either, which needs to elect a new leader so it can try and rebuild some of the damage that Johnson has done. Now, there's no reason why Johnson needs 3 months. Even if he was going to stay on as a caretaker, which he shouldn't, by the way, but even if he was going to stay on, 3 months is far longer than he needs, or the Conservative Party needs, to elect a new leader. Theresa May became Prime Minister, I think, 19 days after David Cameron resigned as party leader. Johnson himself became Prime Minister a month and a half after Theresa May resigned as party leader. This does not need to stretch out till October.
So how do you see the next couple of weeks then playing out? Or what would you like to see? Because clearly you are against the process that is currently taking place.
Right now, we have a Deputy Prime Minister, Dominic Raab, who is, you know, I'm no fan of him politically, but he is the Deputy Prime Minister, and that role exists for precisely this purpose, taking on the mantle of Prime Minister when the Prime Minister becomes indisposed. Now, Johnson has clearly accepted that he's not going to be Prime Minister anymore, and he's lost the faith, the trust, the goodwill of his party as well as the country. It makes no sense for Dominic Raab not to take on this caretaker role for which his title equips him when Johnson doesn't enjoy the confidence. If all these ministers have told Johnson that he's not fit to serve, it makes no sense for them to then decide to serve for 3 months. 3 months is 3 months too long.
What did you make of his statement in general? Because a lot of people pointing out that that he didn't seem to apologise for anything.
Well, Johnson has never really apologised sincerely for anything in his life, so I wouldn't expect any genuine contrition from him. It was actually quite extraordinary, some of the things he was saying. When he talked about he stayed on through a sense of duty, that was the last thing he was thinking about. He just wants to stay on because he enjoys being Prime Minister, and he wants to stay on a few months longer as well because he wants to outlast the tenure of Theresa May, because he thinks it would be humiliating to be Prime Minister for less time than she was. But he also said really bizarre things about resetting our relationship with the EU while he's about to bring on a trade war with our closest political and commercial friends, and also talking nonsense about lockdown and the vaccine rollout, which has been completely forgotten in terms of vaccine rollout by the British people. The bottom line is that Boris Johnson really has very few achievements to speak of. The one thing that he's done, getting Brexit done, first of all, hasn't actually happened because we're still fighting with the EU. But even if it was done, it's a complete disaster for Britain's economy. There's nothing at all to boast about.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Jonathan Liss, for speaking to us from London. So Boris Johnson has often made divisive and controversial decisions during his time as the UK's Prime Minister. Jonah Hull has more on that.
Not vote for us.
He led his party to a landslide election victory in 2019, but Boris Johnson was to be undone both by events in which he conspired and also by his own character flaws that critics say made him unfit for high office.
Boris Johnson has no social vision. There is no moral leadership. But for him, it was always about becoming Prime Minister, not about being Prime Minister. And he knows himself well enough that he knows that he does not have the skills that you need to be a successful Prime Minister.
Sonia Purnell was a reporter working alongside Johnson in the Brussels bureau of the Daily Telegraph. She describes a man with a lot of the child in him, who enjoyed getting into and out of scrapes, a man drawn to chaos.
And the chaos means that he can sort of emerge through all these things going wrong, all this noise, all this commotion, as the person with the great idea or the wit, the witticism. And that is what appeals to him.
For Boris Johnson, the coronavirus pandemic was a perfect storm of crises and chaos that blew attention away from other problems. Despite his promise to get Brexit done, Britain remains mired in dispute with its biggest trading partner, the European Union. The economy is underperforming, the cost of living rising, health and education systems faltering. Success with the vaccine programme helped obscure Johnson's own indecision and delays in following scientific advice that contributed to one of the highest death tolls in the developed world. Former chief advisor Dominic Cummings described the Prime Minister's leadership as erratic, indecisive, distracted.
Nobody could find a way around the problem of the Prime Minister just like a shopping trolley smashing from one side of the aisle into the other.
The shopping trolley metaphor would quickly be seized upon by the opposition.
So he's doing what he always does, crashing over to the other side of the aisle.
Boris Johnson learned early to be self-sufficient in a family of competitive siblings, with a mother who suffered ill health and a father who was frequently absent. At the elite British boarding school Eton, he came to believe ordinary rules did not apply to him. In the infamous Bullingdon Drinking Club at Oxford, the outward persona of a jovial buffoon disguised an inner ambition for power. And as both a journalist for the Times newspaper and a minister in opposition, Johnson was accused of lying and fired. These, then, were the qualities he brought to politics, as Mayor of London, as Foreign Secretary, and then as Prime Minister. Entitlement, dishonesty, and indifference.
This is really the first time in his life where he's ever actually been held to account for anything. He's always been indulged, he's always been excused, there's always been reasons made for him for his bad behaviour.
There was wide support for his handling of the war in Ukraine, but Johnson never recovered from the scandal known as Partygate. He received a police fine for attending a lockdown party in Downing Street, making him the first British Prime Minister to break the law while in office. A civil service report into a string of similar gatherings described a failure of leadership. Eventually, 148 of his own MPs, 40% of the parliamentary party, turned against him in a vote of no confidence. Boris Johnson limped on for a bit, but the reasons to forgive him had run out. Jonah Hull, Al Jazeera.
Let's bring in Tim Bale, who's a professor of politics at Queen Mary University of London. He's joining us from there. Welcome to Al Jazeera. So is it the right thing for Boris Johnson to do, to stay on as caretaker?
I think that is a really difficult question. Clearly, most of the public who want to see him resigned would like him out straight away. I think it's something like 7 out of 10 people think he should go and go now. Those MPs who resign from the government will clearly feel that he should go now and let the Deputy Prime Minister take over. The role of the caretaker Prime Minister is simply to keep the ship afloat and not to make any particularly controversial statements or policies. Is Boris Johnson really the man to do that? I don't think so.
Right, because we've already seen him make some cabinet appointments earlier on today, even though Boris Johnson, as you know, has resigned himself. So what do you think the strategy is behind that?
Well, I mean, he has posts to fill. He doesn't want to bring in the people who resigned. Most of those people he has brought in would be recognised, generally speaking, as allies of his, or else people who are just willing to do the job for the sake of public service. I don't think there's any sense in which he's, you know, making a move to try and stay on. But I think, you know, one of the things that he does care about is how long he will be prime minister for. He does want to beat Theresa May's record of staying in office. That's clear. And he doesn't want to depart the scene immediately. He wants a little bit of time, perhaps even to make up for the chaos that he's caused over the last few days. And I think he does very much value his relationship with Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine. He'd like to see himself carrying on that kind of world statesman role. And I suggest that that's probably something to do with it.
What is your sense of how the leadership election will pan out in terms of the key candidates going forward?
Well, I think the two ministers whose resignation really started this process, Sajid Javid and Rishi Sunak, will definitely stand. There are a couple of people who stayed in cabinet in order to demonstrate their loyalty, thinking that that would enhance their appeal. Liz Truss is certainly one of those. Ben Wallace, the defence secretary, may be another. People have talked about a more junior minister, Penny Mordaunt. And there are also people outside of the government who could argue that it's best to go for a clean skin, somebody who's not associated with Boris Johnson, someone like Tom Tugendhat, who heads up the Foreign Affairs Committee, also Jeremy Hunt, who lost to Boris Johnson back in 2019. So there are a whole range of people who will stand. And we could see, as we did in 2019, actually, around five votes of the parliamentary party in order to winnow down the number of MPs who go forward to the membership ballot to just two people. So I think we'll see a pretty chaotic process over the next few days in which people will suggest themselves as candidates, test the waters, and then we will get almost straight away into the voting.
Right. And just give me your sense of how damaging you think this could be for the party, or has been for the party, in fact?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's no doubt that Boris Johnson's personal ratings have been appalling for quite some time, and they have probably been dragging the Conservative Party down. I suppose there is some optimism within the Conservative Party that once they ditch him, people will begin to look at the party and the government anew. That is possible. But you have to count that off against the fact that this country is facing some pretty dire economic circumstances. We have a huge spike in inflation.
Right.
Possibly we are going into recession. Whether Boris Johnson going will make much difference to that, certainly if you believe
Tim Bale,
the economy.
I'll just have to jump in there. My apologies, but we're coming to the end of the programme. But thank you so much for joining us and speaking to us from London.